You're listening to Vatican Radio.
Some of you may have seen it splashed across newspapers around the world, the iconic image of a Catholic priest peacefully interposing his cassock-clad body between an armored police vehicle and the open gate of a church-cum-shelter and first aid clinic for students trying to flee a dangerous confrontation with police, an image highlighting the South African university crisis and its far-reaching consequences. Shortly after that photograph was taken, Jesuit Father Graham Pugin was shot in the face with a rubber bullet as he stood as a human shield between Holy Trinity Catholic Church, right next to the university, and riot police who had ordered him to lock the gate. Father Graham was wounded in the mouth and is now recovering at the Johannesburg Jesuit Institute. The South African student demonstrations began last October at Johannesburg's main university campus when students blocked the entrance to the campus following indications that the institution would raise fees by 10.5% this year. Under the banner, "Fees Must Fall," the protests have led to the closure of some of the country's top universities. Father Graham, who spoke to Vatican Radio's Linda Bordoni 2 days after the incident, has been one of the facilitators, along with other clergy and student leaders, working towards an agreement between students, management, and other university stakeholders. He says he hopes Holy Trinity Catholic Church will continue to serve as a safe and sacred space for negotiations. He also speaks of the continuing chain of injustice that is being perpetrated in South Africa and of the situation of so many young people who are unable to break the cycle of poverty that is crippling the nation because they cannot afford to pay for an education.
Father Graham, we read about the incident, can I call it an incident, that happened to you as you stood before the gates of the chapel. Would you like to tell us what happened?
I was present at the church gates on Monday, as I have been throughout the disturbances on campus. We are not actually on the campus ourselves, but we are surrounded on three sides by the campus, the fourth side opening onto a public street. And during this time of unrest, I have tried to be present for the students, for anybody involved, providing a safe and sacred space, a place of refuge, a place of sanctuary, which I believe is the church's role in these situations. So each time, and there have been several times, each time I have heard the sound of shots on campus, the sounds of screaming as students flee, I've dashed outside into the parking lot. And whether or not they're coming from the public side on the street or whether they're coming from the interleading gates, the university on the other side, I have tried to be there to reassure frightened, panicking students and to reassure frightened, panicking policemen. I've had a number of exchanges with the security people too. And on Monday, that's what had happened. We'd been expecting violence. In the light of the failed negotiations on Friday, we'd heard rumors and we had been asked whether on Monday we could provide safe parking to ambulances that would be on standby. And it was felt that there would be the safest place for them would be on the church property. They hadn't arrived yet when the shooting started. I had unlocked interleading gates from the university, which is contrary to the unwritten agreement we have, which is that we only open it for church parking on the weekends when the university doesn't need it. But I have really said that when there are being students escaping tear gas, rubber bullets, pepper sprays, etc., I will always do my best to open that gate. I've said that to the university and I've said it to the students. I opened the gate. A policeman who was present insisted that I should close it. I refused to close it. He closed it. I opened it. He closed it. I opened it. An altercation continued. He had three assistants with him. I had opened the gate and I had locked the padlock onto one side of the gate so that the padlock couldn't be used to lock it. He asked me to promise that I would not unlock the gate. I refused to give that undertaking. He had taken my name in his little black book, and once we'd gone through the formalities, things actually became reasonably cordial. So he allowed being students off campus onto our parking lot. After a while, somebody from the university side came along, the newer, bigger, better chain and padlock, and locked the gates very firmly on their side. We have, incidentally, over the last fortnight, we've had two incidents of the gates being open. So by this stage, the gates were firmly locked. I explained to those in the church grounds that the gates had been locked on that side. We only had the entrance from the church, but that I would do all I could to keep that open so that we could maintain that safe and sacred space. I had promised I would do my best to maintain. I went and stood at the church gates in my alb, as I have done whenever the tensions have been high. Wanted it to be abundantly clear that I am, in fact, a clergyman, that I'm perfectly visible, that I'm not hiding from anybody. And I stood at the church gates, looking down the road that passes us. There was various activity going on. Difficult from where I was to say instigating what, and the narrative is very complicated, who can say. But from time to time, a wave of students would run screaming up the road towards us, and by this stage it was perfect to allow any unarmed person into the church. If students were carrying sticks or stones, I insisted that they should drop them. As far as I know, I was successful, and as I looked down with the students running towards me, I could see, I'm not good at saying it was this sort or that sort or the next sort, a large vehicle with several guns, or what looked like guns, pointing out the side of it. It went very slowly across the intersection, all the while firing towards us. I presume they were rubber bullets, to the best of my knowledge. Live ammunition has not been used. But it was certainly enough to cause panicked students to flee. At various points along this, we have a clinic under the church which we operate for the sake of the street. Then the ambulances had not yet arrived. And students who were on standby, willing to give what first aid they could, would be allowed to proceed, could use our facilities. A doctor arrived to open the clinic. I'm aware of the ambulance. I had seen two students in it. I saw a third get into the ambulance when it left. I think the second ambulance had left at some stage. So things were very fraught, very violent, and I was doing my best to maintain at least one little haven.
Father Graham, hasn't the church in South Africa historically provided a neutral venue for negotiations, or sanctuary, as you say, in situations of unrest or difficulty?
The church has been trying to provide the kind of ministry and service that the church ought to provide. I mean, for the last 60 years, trying to provide Christian witness, and a large part of that has been the role of providing sanctuary in difficult times. During the apartheid struggle, we were very often the only place that people could safely meet, and we did that. I did it myself in the church in the 70s, I did it in the 80s, I did it in the 90s, and I commented to a friend, if only we'd got it right, we wouldn't still be doing it. So that has been very much part of the role of the church and all the churches in South Africa.
Father Graham, are you involved as a facilitator at this moment in time, working towards an agreement between the students at Wits University and the government?
I was until I was shot. at the moment, I'm not anywhere near the campus. I had been present at several of the important meetings, and I had been asked by the team of facilitators whether they could use Holy Trinity as a safe place where they could meet out of the glare of the media, and that had in fact been a large part of how this ministry had developed. We have had groups from all constituencies, well, I can't say all, from many constituencies, many wide and varied constituencies, using the church as a place of refuge.
It's very upsetting to watch this kind of violence erupt in South Africa because of all the promises that had been made, of course. And education is such a fundamental tool in helping a people exit from poverty. What do you hope for the situation? How do you hope it will evolve at this point?
I hope that we are able to come to a just and peaceful solution. We're very much aware in South Africa that it's very difficult to advance both those simultaneously under all circumstances. I have certainly tried to do so by ministry and before my formal ministry began. I was one of the first conscientious objectors in 1979. I was court-martialed refusing to shoot people, so I feel fairly well qualified under these circumstances.
Father Graham, has reconciliation in South Africa really been completed, can we say?
It certainly hasn't. Reconciliation itself is a very loaded word in South Africa. There are people who will argue that it's impossible to reconcile the oppressor with the oppressed. So one has to be very careful. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission did a wonderful job, but it was limited in its scope to a huge amount of work needing done. Even at the moment, in the student body, seeing horrible polarization between the fees must fall on the one side, which is perceived as being largely almost entirely black, and the take that's back, which is perceived highly white, with a number of involvement. Neither of these perceptions is entirely true, but there's enough in it to make reconciliation very difficult. We're trying to maintain peace and reconciliation. Very volatile situation.
Will you be going back to your post at the Holy Trinity Church near Wits University as soon as your lip mends? And will you be providing shelter in the coming days or in the coming weeks?
I will be going back. I'm eager to go back as soon as we judge that my presence won't be provocation on one side or the other. I received a fair amount of their coverage, so I'm a factor in it at the moment. Decided that it's better just for now to keep well away. The situation is being extremely well handled by those who formerly assisted me at Trinity and those who stepped up to take my place. But I'm looking to going back because my real business is there helping the poor, running those soup kitchens. One of the things we've been doing has been running a feeding scheme for hungry students. All this is about poverty and students. I can say this without breaking the seal. I had no sooner arrived in May that I had two separate students confessing in the confessional that they had stolen their rooms. They'd steal food. Peaceful from this or desperately instituted a scheme for hungry students.
So the students really cannot afford to pay the fees, especially if those fees go up even more.
The students certainly can't afford to pay. I'm not 100% confident of my figures, but they're along the lines that there are 36,000 students at the university 22,000 of those are on government loans that they will need to repay, but those loans cover their university fees and their accommodation, not cover their food. So those students, by definition, are very poor. I believe there are 6,000 who are well-funded, either by their families or by bursaries. And in between, there are 8,000 not qualified government assistants and whose families cannot afford to send them. They are children of domestic workers. They are children of laborers. At best, they are the children of school teachers and policemen.
So the chain of inequality continues in South Africa.
Continues. It continues appallingly. And that's what this is all about. About saying universities cannot resolve this. This can only be resolved by the government. I've heard an accountant speaking, it's financially possible. It would be possible if all the money that disappears into corruption and back pockets of government ministers, if that were available, there would be no difficulty. All it needs is the political will.
Father Graham, I understand you have received a message of solidarity from your brothers here in Rome who are meeting in the General Congregation.
They have been wonderful. I haven't heard the details, but I did hear that they had prayed for us after they heard the news of my shooting. I'm very grateful to them.
Is there anything you'd like to say other than what you've already told me?
I'd like to just add, we've also had great support from the nuncio to South Africa. He has been wonderful. He's phoned, he's invited me to stay to recuperate. Just great. And we think he's marvelous. And the other thing I'd say, anybody who says this, please keep praying. Be desperately, desperately.
Jesuit Father Graham Pugin there, speaking to me, Linda Bordoni.